Hello, and welcome to The Check-In, where we gather each weekday for community connection and conversation over the airwaves. Thanks for checking in with us today. As the coronavirus continues to spread and as states and local governments are looking at reopening plans, the race is on. Researchers all over the country are working together to find treatments, vaccines, and now the FDA and American Red Cross are partnering with the Mayo Clinic for a clinical trial involving convalescent plasma. It's exploring the idea that people who have recovered from an illness have antibodies for it in their blood, and that plasma might help in the fight against COVID-19. And MU Healthcare is a partner in this innovative effort. So our first guest today is Dr. Dima Dandashi. She's an infectious disease specialist and MU Healthcare's principal investigator on this project. Dr. Dima Dandashi, welcome to The Check-In.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. We're also talking today with nursing specialist Linnell Phillips. Linnell works on the front lines of public health and disease prevention and has worked and trained with the CDC on issues like environmental health, vaccinations, and tuberculosis control. Welcome, Linnell Phillips.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So it's really a pleasure to have both of you here. I was my producer and colleague, Christopher Husted, and I were talking about how I think we have two of the smartest people on the planet on the show today. So it's really great to have you both. And Dr. Dandashi, let me start with you to learn about this clinical trial first and foremost. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing as the principal investigator for MU in this project?
Yes, sure. So I want to just explain, you explained it very well, actually, about like what is convalescent plasma.
Okay.
So this is not a new treatment. This is an old treatment. It has been like maybe century old. And the idea of it is that we go to plasma when we don't have any other options, when we don't have vaccines, when we don't have effective treatment. This is where we go to think about plasma as an immunity treatment. So the plasma is for people who recover from COVID-19 will have these antibodies that if we get and give it to someone who is sick and is still fighting the virus, it could help their recovery or, maybe saving their life. However, we have to be cautious about saying that because we still don't know. And that's why we're doing it under a clinical trial in order to see whether this is effective or not.
Okay.
So that clinical trial is like with Mayo Clinic as the lead, but there are many hospitals included, and the University of Missouri is kind of partnered up with this to offer it to our patients.
Okay, and thank you. I appreciate you clarifying that because, as you say, the use of plasma antibodies is something that it has historically been used. What's new is the question, and what's being explored is whether this can actually be used as a possible treatment for COVID-19. So Dr. Dandashi, tell us what you're going to be using volunteers in this trial you mentioned. What do you need from volunteers? How can people participate?
Yeah, so actually, like the convalescent plasma, the treatment is something that no one owns, right? It's the patients who recovered and who are willing to donate their plasma. This is how we get it. Without these donors, we will not have plasma and we won't be able to give it to our patients. So really, this is a program that solely depend on really people to volunteer and give their plasma. And there is a lot of criteria for people to be able to give plasma. And that's why it's reduced the pool. So even if I want to, I might not be able to give plasma. And that's why, like, not everyone can do it. And that's why it makes the pool, like, really small. So for people to be able to give, have a matching blood group to give it to a patient that is now sick.
All right.
So
go ahead.
No, what I want to say is that for donors, the American Red Cross is where we get the plasma. Like, this is where people would go to donate their plasma. And, like, this is a partnership between the American Red Cross, between the Mayo Clinic, and the other hospitals to do that effort. So so definitely we are helping, kind of coordinating this, but the American Red Cross are the place where people would go to get their plasma.
All right. Let me just say to listeners, we're talking with Dr. Dima Dandashi about MU Healthcare's participation in this cutting-edge new COVID-19 convalescent plasma trial. We're also going to be talking with Linnell Phillips about the public health aspects of disease prevention and control. What would you like to know about the science behind clinical trials, prevention, fighting disease outbreaks? As we have with us two people on the cutting edge of prevention right now with Linnell Phillips and also clinical trials with Dr. Dandashi. If you have a question for them, you can join with your question. I know they're very smart, but there's no dumb questions here. So go ahead and give us a call if you have a question or a comment. Dr. Dandashi, tell me, there's going to be a lot of preparation. Just what is your day-to-day like as you prepare for this clinical trial? Are you already in it? What are you doing right now, and what's your timeline look like?
Yes, we are actually already enrolling patients, and we already facilitated so many people to go to donate their plasma. The as soon as we heard that this is a possibility, we tried to jump on it because we wanted, I mean, physicians and all the healthcare workers, they're really desperate to help their patients. And and that's why, like, once we heard that this is possible, that we could contribute to this and be part of it, we started the process. It's a long process, but we were able to do it. And like a couple of weeks ago, actually, we transfused our first patient. And it's ongoing. Okay. And we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so you're already doing, it's a transfusion that you do as part of this trial. Can you tell us about that? What are your observations on this first transfusion so far?
So the transfusion part is for people who are really sick. So there's two parts for the convalescent plasma trial. There's the part that people are donating, and there's the other part where the people who are really sick are people who get the plasma. So the FDA gave us, like, put a regulation that only people who are really critically sick, either have like a critical illness or even life-threatening condition, are only the ones who can receive the plasma. So we are starting with people who are really, really sick to begin with, and this is kind of like a last resort treatment. It's hard to tell, and it's hard to say, like, is it effective or not, because, like, we still have, like, a small number, and without all the hospitals coming together and putting this data together, it's probably hard to tell based on a dozen or even, like, you know, a couple of patients. We really need to have big data to say that, and it's early to judge that.
Okay. And you mentioned the importance of the data sharing. I suppose with the clinical trial, that's one thing that will be happening. How will you all communicate what you're observing and what's happening between you? I suppose that kind of data sharing and communication is key.
Yes. So actually, like, so the Mayo Clinic have a registry where we put all the patients that de-identify data. Like, we don't tell, like, you know, any specific information about a specific patient, but the people who got plasma, what is kind of their outcomes. We actually fill a lot of paperwork and a lot of observation about adverse events, because, like, the least thing that we want is actually giving something to patient hoping that it's going to make them better, but actually it's it will have, like, a bad outcome, right? So that's why it's very important to observe all these adverse events. We do it at 4 hours after transfusion, at 7 days, at 30 days. So we kind of keep track of this. And this is with data sharing. If, like, we see a trend and we see, for example, that people who are getting the convalescent plasma are getting worse, then this will stop immediately. We won't continue with such a trial.
All right.
So that is kind of the importance of having all of us together in this.
Okay. Yes, that's great. We're talking with Dr. Dima Dandashi about MU Healthcare's participation in a cutting-edge COVID-19 convalescent plasma trial. We're hearing all about the ins and outs of how this clinical trial is going. It's just starting here at MU with their participation. We'll also be talking over the next half hour with Linnell Phillips about public health aspects of disease prevention and control. What would you like to know about the science behind clinical trials, prevention, fighting disease outbreaks? We have the experts here with us today. Linda, thanks for calling. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my question. My question is, what about people that have not been diagnosed and are possibly carriers of the virus that haven't had the test done to see if they could possibly have the antibodies? Would they be able to give their plasma?
Okay, thanks for that question, Linda. Dr. Dandashi, do you have an answer for that?
Yes, thank you, Linda. This is a really great question, because we know that once the COVID-19 pandemic started, we didn't have, like, a lot of tests to do. We didn't offer it, like, as soon as we wanted to. So a lot of people felt that they got COVID-19 and they recovered, but they never been tested and confirmed that they have the virus. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing now is, like, so the American Red Cross had acquired an antibody testing, and we have also antibody testing now at MU. And so these antibodies tells us that if someone got exposed to COVID-19 at one point, it's not very helpful in telling us if they have the disease now or if they, but it just tells us that they recovered from the COVID-19 and they have these antibodies, that this is what we really need to transfuse the, to other patients. It's the antibodies that they have in their plasma.
Okay. So while we're on that question, well, thanks very much, Linda, for your call. Did you have a follow-up question or does that answer your question, Linda?
Well, other than how do we get tested for how, I mean, is it possible that we can actually go and have the test done for the antibodies?
Okay, thanks for that, Linda. Thanks again for your call. We'll take it up with Dr. Donji here. Thanks for calling and stay well, Linda.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Yeah. So Dr. Dondashi, I guess the question is also, so yeah, what, if you think you're in that group, what do you do now?
Right. So we have, there are two ways that we could do that. The American Red Cross, they have their own website where you can go and kind of put your information and they will give you, if you are willing to donate plasma. So they will give you a call to follow up and to schedule like an appointment where you go and they will check the antibodies. And I asked them specifically whether they're going to tell the patients whether they have antibodies or not, because like if they gave their plasma and they didn't have antibodies, what they're going to do with this plasma. So what they told me is that, so people who have antibodies, they will tell them that they had antibodies and they will use their plasma to give it to patients who are fighting the virus. But for people who, let's say, give their plasma, but they did not have antibodies, they're going to use this plasma for other reasons, because, you know, many patients would need plasma for different other reasons than COVID-19. And, you know, giving plasma is very important, not only in this time, but in other times as well. So they will use this plasma for other indications if they did not have the antibodies, but they will let the patient know. Another way is that we have also our own website just to facilitate and help, you know, such questions. We reach out to patients and we ask them to fill this information. So if they said they've never been tested for COVID-19, for example, we will give them a call. So like, okay, if you want to do the antibody, we could do it as well at MU. So this is how we are doing it for now, you know, but things are changing. Every couple of days, you know, we have new information, we have new data, and it's what I say now, probably it will be different in 2 to 3 days. It's like just, you know, keep changing, but this is how we're doing it right now.
Okay. We want to bring in Linnell Phillips here in a minute, but let me just ask Dr. Dondashi before we get off the specifics of the trial, what will success look like for you as you're observing and as you are doing these transfusions? What will success look like in each patient and what will success look like for you sort of in a year?
Well, I would say the first thing is survival, right? Because these patients, we know when they are really critically sick, there is some group, a small percentage, that probably will have a high mortality. And this is kind of the first important goal that we need to achieve. It's like, can we save their lives by giving them plasma? So that's number one. Or giving them any supportive treatment and any treatment like our colleagues in the critical care, also physicians and other healthcare workers, like all the efforts together, really, to see whether we could save someone's life. That's number one. And number two, how long the patient really stays in the hospital, how long, you know, he has like severe disease, that's very important. If we could make someone getting better faster, that would be a good response. So this is how, I think this is kind of the two main success, I would say, that we could measure it.
All right. That definitely sounds like success. Thanks for that. And let me bring in Linnell Phillips. Linnell, you also have worked with, you know, infectious disease outbreaks. Let's talk a little bit more generally now about what both of you, Dr. Dondashi and Linnell Phillips, have learned from past infectious disease outbreaks. Dr. Dondashi, you've had a lot of experience with HIV as well. Linnell, what? Let's bring you in to ask, what have you learned from outbreaks like HIV, SARS, H1N1 that you're observing that we maybe have learned or should have learned from these outbreaks? Linnell?
Yes, thank you. First off, I want to thank MU Healthcare for stepping up and participating in a really, really important clinical trial, because clinical trials are super complicated, and in the midst of a crisis, that's just a whole other level. So appreciate that. And so public health's role in all of this is to prevent disease before it ever even happens, before, you know, prevent people forever having to go to the hospital and need treatment. So we're taking, we attack problems at a different level in the community and focus on prevention and screening and contact tracing. And so we've learned a lot from previous disease outbreaks. I know that the public is now just sort of learning about contact tracing, and people are realizing now that this is something public health has always done, and you have a health department in every county, and we have this expertise. We have been doing it for all of the diseases you previously mentioned. And but I think public knowledge and interest in what public health does has waned over the years as we've relied more on vaccines and antibiotics, and infectious diseases of yesteryear aren't certainly as visible anymore because we've been successful in what we've done. So we're learning now that there's a renewed interest in public health, obviously, because how well public health does our job in preventing COVID from spreading dictates how soon we can get out of our houses and resume our lives. So all of a sudden, public health has much more of a focus than it has had in previous years.
All right. We want to pick that up. But let me just remind listeners that you're listening to KBIA's Noontime Check-In, and we're talking with Dr. Dima Dandashi about infectious disease and a new COVID-19 plasma clinical trial she's leading at MU. And we're talking with Linnell Phillips, who works on the front lines of disease control and prevention. You can join us with your questions or comments. What do you want to know about the science behind clinical trials? What do you want to know about public health? As Linnell Phillips just says, it's always going on. It's just that we're very, very interested in it right now. Linnell, you just mentioned about reopening and the things that are needed for us to get back to normal in our society. And, you know, Missouri this week has gone into phase one of a planned reopening. How does that plan look like from a public health perspective for you?
There's several pillars of,
yes,
you know, what we need to do. And two of those that I think are critical is that we need more testing, and we need more contact tracing and augment our ability to do that. Most public health departments have been really stretched during this COVID outbreak, and as you can imagine, and health department workers haven't had a day off since, you know, early March. So I want to really take this time to recognize the incredible efforts that our health departments have put forth with really limited resources and funding at this point. So, so those two things really need to happen. And we're looking forward to plans gaining details for our state so that we have the ability to test more and more and to know how best to prevent COVID transmission from getting out of hand in the state as we open up.
Okay. And Dr. Dandashi, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's, it's going to be a trial, also an error, right? So there's a lot of things that we don't know about this virus. And the issue is, like, many people were not, because of the change, we changed a lot of the rules and a lot of the things that we said, and then we went back and changed it. And that's because we are learning. This is a novel virus. This is a new virus that we're still learning about. We learned a lot, but we still have a lot to learn. So that's, I think people would have to also know that part. So then we all in this plan together.
Dr. Dandashi, you bring up a really crucial point there, which is that the communication of the disease is so important to the public, and making sure that communication is consistent and effective even as the disease itself and what we know about it changes, as you say. So this pandemic has given us a chance to see how various cultures and governments within the U.S. At various levels, and also throughout Europe, China, globally, respond to and communicate health messages during a crisis. What, Linnell Phillips, is the takeaway for you about America's response and our various levels of government and our response in the crisis? What have you observed during this pandemic?
I think that this pandemic has certainly exposed some social injustices and health disparities that already existed, but it really has shined spotlights on some basic social issues that we really need to address. And that's not unusual with infectious diseases, but it's just really been acute with our experience here. So, for instance, if you're a contact tracer and you call somebody and you say, hey, you have been identified as a contact to a COVID case, you need to quarantine for 14 days. That means no leaving the house, no running an errand, no any public exposure whatsoever. And then that person responds, well, I have a job. I need to feed my kids. I live paycheck to paycheck. Maybe I don't even really have a stable home, you know. So you quickly learn that the social resources that need to be behind our COVID response are enormous. And
yes,
and it's a real challenge for a state to prepare for. So I think that in general, the public has been amazingly patient and cooperative with all of this. But I imagine that may wane as this all continues. And so assuring that as we reopen, we're doing it safely and we're not going to have to be in a position where we dial back the liberties that we've extended to everybody in the community this past Monday and make us return to more strict isolation orders. I really hope and pray that we can keep control of this outbreak and maintain forward progression towards restoring our economy.
All right. I hope so, too. And I have more questions for you, Linnell Phillips, and also you, Dr. Dima Dandashi, more along those lines. But let me just remind people that you're checking in with us on The Check-In on KBIA. Thanks for joining us today. You can also join us by phone. We have some good questions that we're going to get to here in a minute. Let's take a call from Jason calling from St. Louis. Jason, what's your question?
So there's been a lot of talk about the need for more plasma donations and also coincidentally, the mention of the spread of HIV in the past, there are a lot of people who aren't allowed to donate plasma and blood because of histories of sexual relations that are homosexual, which that obviously being because they're at a higher risk for HIV. Do you think that that's a necessary precaution in these times to prevent that spread? Or do you think that it would be possible to have that lifted even temporarily in this time when we need plasma from people who have recovered from COVID?
Great question, Jason. Thank you. Dr. Dandashi?
Yes, thank you, Jason. Actually, this is a very good point that you bring up because the first important thing is that the safety of our patients. So we definitely don't want to transfuse plasma to save them from something and then risk their health by giving them another infection. But all the blood that we give, any blood product, is being tested for many infectious diseases, including HIV, hepatitis, and other disease. And I know that some of this rules about if someone is, had a previously sexually transmitted disease or they're not allowed to give, convalescent plasma or any other blood product. And the FDA assured us that they are going to revise these guidelines. This is not something that we decide, but they are in the process of revising. These have been very long, long ago put these guidelines and should be probably revised.
All right. Jason, does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jason. Take care. Let's take another caller. We've got Shirley calling in from Fulton area. Shirley, go ahead.
Good morning.
Hello. It's close enough.
Okay.
What's your question, Shirley?
I was wondering, I hear of a lot of tests and some being sold saying that their results for antibodies aren't reliable. And it's, how does your study protect the validity of your results in terms of reliability? How do you make sure the plasma got the antibodies?
Okay. Thanks so much for that question, Shirley. Please take care and check in with us again sometime. Dr. Dandashi, can you answer that question about the studies and the testing, making sure you have the information that you need?
Yes, the antibody testing has been an issue, because we have a lot of tests that, were under emergency authorization, giving the okay before being, usually validated, the usual process. And some of them are not reliable. That's completely true. And that's why, the antibody checking did not start except, recently. So the American Red Cross have taken, the antibodies as approved under the FDA. And they are checking these antibodies. Whether we are transfusing someone a plasma that does not have adequate antibodies, that's a great question. And unfortunately, we might not know how much antibodies is in this plasma. But what we hope is that everything we do is risk and benefit. So what we hope is that even if we're trying in a last resort that to give someone this plasma and hoping that it has antibodies in it, until we have a better test to check how much antibodies and how much effective are these antibodies to kill the virus.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. You know, Dr. Dandashi and Lynnell Phillips, we only have a few seconds left. This has gone by way too quickly. But let me just give a few seconds for you both for final words. Let's start with you, Dr. Dandashi. Any final thoughts in general and or specifically about the trial as you go forward?
I think in general, what I always think is that the pandemic is not going to be the last. And I think we should kind of learn from all the experiences that we had, the failures and the success, in order to be better prepared when we have another pandemic, because this is probably not going to be our last time, either in our lifetime or not, but we should be better prepared for next time.
Okay, thank you so much. And Lynnell Phillips, any final thoughts?
Yes, I just urge everybody to support and celebrate and encourage their public health departments, because the better public health can do their job, the sooner we get our lives back. So do support public health and all of their efforts. They are working really, really hard right now, and they would really appreciate some support.
Okay, that's great. And Lynnell, I really wanted to just ask you about that really cool epidemic intelligence unit that the CDC has, which is almost like a, any other intelligence unit, but it's about rooting out disease. So we'll just have to have you back to talk about that. Thank you so much, Lynnell Phillips, for being on the check-in.
No problem. Thank you.
And thank you also, Dr. Dandashi. Really enjoyed the conversation. Best of luck with your trial, and thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you so much.
All right. That's it for today's check-in. Thanks again to Dr. Dima Dandashi and Lynnell Phillips. Like I said, two of the smartest people out there talking with us about disease prevention today and a really cool clinical trial. Thank you also for checking in with us. Let me just say the check-in's produced by Christopher Husted and me, with KBIA News Director Ryan Famuliner, Zia Kelly, Madison Conti, and Hannah France. Thanks for checking in with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. It'll be Friday, and we're going to talk about animals. It's Animal Today, tomorrow. The animals inside our houses, our pets, and outside our windows. So join us for that. In the meantime, stay well and stay in touch.